This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this episode of LabCast. I'm Brendan Knoyer, and today we're joined by Nick Hayes, principal at Influencer 50, a leading influencer identification and engagement firm. He's also the author of the book Influencer Marketing, Who Really Influences Your Customers? And he was kind enough to write the foreword for our latest ebook, The Ultimate Guide to Influencer Marketing. Nick, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks, Brendan.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. Now, like I mentioned, we have a new ebook out, The Ultimate Guide to Influencer Marketing, that you contributed to. So we thought this would be a great time to, you know, have a conversation about, you know, the power and value of influencer marketing for early and expansion stage companies. So I guess a good place to start is right at the beginning. What is influencer marketing? How do you define it to people who are unfamiliar with what you do?
Oh, influencer marketing, the way that we see it, is we really base the idea on the fact that most marketing departments are, in our view, pretty much set to be 20 years behind where the market is. So if you think that 20 years ago, if a vendor company, whether they were a startup, mid-stage, or an existing large company, they would be using PR to try and get as much media coverage as they could. They'd be going to industry analysts, probably. And that's fine if industry analysts and journalists were the most important influencers in their marketplace. Right. Now, 20 years ago, they very much were. And we've based our company on the understanding that in the past 10 years, the influencers have very much segmented themselves so that there are, according to us, 25 different categories of influencer. And many of those previously won't have been worked with or targeted or engaged with by client firms. So our view of influencer marketing is that we try to understand who are the real influencers behind purchasing decisions and not just the well-known names, the major journalists that most marketing departments still believed to be the case.
Now, you said in the foreword, you know, influencer marketing is something that a lot of business folks, when you explain it to them, they intuitively get right off the bat. But still, there's a lot of companies that aren't really doing it in the way that you're describing here. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just, you know, a slow climb to sort of change your thinking, being like, we don't just have to target these PR and journalism people. There's this whole new set of influencers that the internet has created for us to target.
Well, it's a good question, but there's a few things that I think has confused the market. The most recent one that's confused is that there's a number of social media companies who talk about themselves being online influence measurement. And what they're really doing is analyzing huge amounts of social media data, largely based on Twitter, to what they believe is to try to understand who are the most influential people. And we very much disagree with that because we think that's a way of measuring noise. It has very little correlation to do with influence. So you asked just now about, you know, what our understanding of influencer marketing is. Our understanding of an influencer is someone or a group who have an effect on the buying decision. Mm-hmm. Now, that's very different from individuals who just decide they want to shout a lot, they want to make a lot of noise,
right.
But there's no measurement as to whether anybody's actually listening and putting those views into practice.
Right.
And so our view of influencer marketing is that it's based on the effect. Influence is an effect. It's not an action. So that's one thing we think has confused the market, is that people suddenly believe that maybe analyzing Twitter data is a way to shortcut the search for influencers. And every time we try to measure the effect of most social media, but certainly Twitter, on B2B decisions, we can't find any correlation between social media activity and the effect it has on B2B decisions. So we think that the vast majority of B2B purchasing is still based on offline conversations rather than online. So one thing that's confused the market is the fact that some people are saying you can now look at this market solely through social media data, and we certainly don't believe that. The second thing that I think has traditionally confused the market is that for the past 10 years, every PR company in the world has had a slide called Influencing the Influencers. Mm-hmm. And every time we see those slides, it's effectively a slide that goes after journalists, perhaps industry analysts, and a few extra people. And the problem is that when you're targeting, when you're working in influencer marketing, when you look at it through a PR company's eyes, you really want as many of those influencers to be journalists as possible, because that's your bread and butter business. So that there's also a very established tranche of PR companies who are saying the influencers are really journalists plus a few others, and we look after those. And from our point of view, when we look at markets for our clients, we can rarely find journalists or industry analysts that collectively are more than 30 or 40% of the influencers in any particular sector. So that there's 60% who are non-journalists, non-analysts. And because they can't be grouped into any major category, there's not one category that is always 30 or 40 or 50% of the influencers. They're very fragmented. And so it's a much harder market to understand. It's a much harder market to target. And so that's the reason for the confusion, is people just think it looks too hard to understand the real influencers. We'll just go for the people we accept as being important in the market.
Sure. And you mentioned briefly there, you know, the difference in influencer marketing for B2B companies, and, you know, the majority of our audience are B2Bs. So, you know, the question there, you know, you said how Twitter and a lot of the social media platforms aren't really effective in terms of finding influencers that actually can influence the buying decision for B2B companies. So if you are a B2B company and you're interested in influencer marketing, where do you start? What are some of the first steps, I guess, that you take to really get on that path?
The number one thing that any company, whatever stage evolution it is, the number one thing that any company needs to do is understand the buying process for your particular product or service. And there really isn't one size fits all. So it's easy to say, well, you go out and identify the influencers, but you don't know the influencers unless you know the target market that you're aiming at. And you really have to understand how that target market makes its buying decisions. Now, there's several evolutions that's happened over the past decade. And the reason that B2C is different is that largely B2C are far more likely to be individual purchasing decisions. So whether it's where you're going to go on vacation, whether it's what car you're going to buy, you'll talk to individuals to get a sounding post on whether what decision you're going to make. But realistically, it comes down to one person's decision, most of those B2C decisions. That's very different in B2B. And around kind of 2000, there was very much in terms of B2B, there was kind of the rockstar CIO moment, when there were certain individuals in corporations who had a lot, who harvested a lot of individual power to make decisions on their own. Mm-hmm. And then obviously when the Arthur Andersen and the corporate governance and the Enron scandals and whatever, as soon as corporate governance came in and Sarbanes-Oxley and whatever, there was so much need for accountability that the era of single-person decision-making really fell by the wayside. And everything now is so much more committee-based, team-based. There's very few B2B decisions of any great stature that don't involve, you know, 5 or 10 individuals. And with that, it means that there's a much more disparate set of influencers, because obviously all of those various decision-makers have their own set of influencers. The decisions are often much more drawn out, and there's much more opportunity for vendors to lose their way, because they might have a product champion who's championing the purchase of their goods, and they lose the way because of internal politics. So the role of the influencer in B2B decisions has been exponentially on the rise as the growth in committee-based decisions has happened throughout the 2000s.
Well, that's interesting stuff. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, as a B2B company, when you're involved in this process, you know, a lot of people will tell you that the ultimate goal of influencer marketing is really to become an influencer yourself, and ultimately through these practices become influential to your potential customers' buying decisions through some of the content you create and the messages you put out. Is that something that you guys abide by or adhere to when you're kind of talking with companies and helping them map out their influencer marketing strategies?
Well, it's funny you say that. Sometimes the answer is absolutely yes. But the actual fact is that when we work with our various client companies to understand the influencers in their marketplace, we have to analyze the entire market. And very often there will be competitors who are influential within their marketplace. So if you're company A, you don't want to hear that company B has three of the most influential individuals in your marketplace, and they all belong to competitors. So absolutely, one of the issues that our clients face is if they find that there are many more competitor influencers than there are homegrown ones. So yes, there is a keenness for our clients, if they're not well represented amongst the major influencers, to become so. But it actually brings me on to a second issue, which is that much as our client companies all want to become influencers, as you suggested, many of the actual influencers in a business marketplace either don't know that they're influencers, or they would prefer not to be known as being influential by anybody else. So it's very different. If you're a journalist or a media personality or something, part of your raison d'etre is to become as well known as you can and to be seen to be amassing as much kudos and as much power and as much weight in the industry as you can. But actually, many of the behind the scenes influencers that we identify, it's not in their either interests, it's not in their personal nature. And certainly their employers may well be against the fact that, or the idea, that those influencers become well-known and understood to be influential. Partly that's because they don't want to be poached by other companies, and that's a big factor. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly some employers who don't want their individuals to be known by name out in the market because they think they'll simply be taken out of their employment.
Right.
And also some influencers believe that their influence is because they operate under the radar. They believe that if everyone now knows that they're a major influencer, they'll be targeted by non-stop marketing campaigns and whatever, and that they'll lose their ability to be as influential as they were to start with. So it's not always in the influencer's interests to be identified.
Well, that's really interesting. I think this is going to be fascinating to a lot of the folks who are interested, hopefully in our ebook, but just getting involved in influencer marketing in general. We're just about out of time, but before we're done, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about Influencer 50, the work you guys do, and where people can go to find more information. They can go to influencer50.com. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, that's an ideal starting place. We've also got an industry kind of magazine-style blog at influencermarketingreview.com, which for individuals who wanted to catch up on the industry and start to understand the industry rather than necessarily our company, they can go to that address. But in terms of just giving you an overview of the company itself, the differentiator I believe that we have since we started 7 or 8 years ago, is that we identify influencers who operate both offline and online.
Very cool. Well, Nick, thanks once again for taking the time, and hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Thanks, Brendan.